This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to Recode Media with Peter Kafka. That is me. It's September. It's September 2021. We're still in the pandemic. How's that going for you guys? Just pausing here. We can all scream. Okay, good. Also, happy Labor Day. I have a Labor Day themed interview for you. It's with Defector Media Editor-in-Chief Tom Lay. Defector is the employee-owned sports website formed after everyone who used to work at the website, formerly known as Deadspin, got up and quit en masse. They are a year old. They have made a run. They're still going. It seems like it's working. Tom gives us pretty good specific details about how that's going, why it's working, what they're doing, what they're not doing. I think you're all going to enjoy this one. Have a good break. Good luck with the home stretch. Talk to you soon. Here's me and Tom Lay. I'm here with Tom Lay. He's the editor-in-chief of Defector, which is the sports blog owned by Defector Media. We can go into the back history. I think a lot of people listening to this show know Defector and some of the story here. If you're just catching up, this is the site that used to be Deadspin until everyone who worked at Deadspin got up and quit one day and then eventually launched this site. So it was employee-owned, for-profit, independent sports media company. I think that's the only one of a kind, right?
Yeah, I don't know if there's one doing specifically sports blogging like we are. I think there are other subscription-based co-op style publications out there, but I think we're the only ones sort of doing it on this particular topic and to the scale that we're trying to do it.
Yeah, I think the highest profile version of this, anyone listening to this podcast knows a lot about Substack and what's going on there, and we'll do some compare and contrast. And also, you know, big media, established media's move sort of away from ads to subscriptions or some sort of melding of that. The reason I'm talking to you right now, it's the beginning of September, which means you guys launched a year ago. Congrats, you're still in business. What's the state of the business right now? Let's just start there. How many people are subscribing? How much are they paying? And how many? And are you guys profitable?
Yeah, so the state of the business is good. We recently just passed the 40,000 paid subscriber plateau.
And the base level there is $80, right?
Yeah, I think it's $79 a year is the base level. And then there are various tiers. You can go up to one that's like, I think, $120, and then one that's $1,000 a year if you're insane and want to give us $1,000 a year for some reason.
So I'm not great at math, so I just punched this into a calculator. But by my Apple Macintosh calculators calculations, you guys are at $3 million plus a year in revenue.
Yes.
How many employees do you have?
Good question. 23, I think.
And what's the average salary for those folks?
Well, it's a little difficult to answer. We're set up so that everyone makes the same base amount every 2 weeks. So we all have a base salary that's the same, which is $58,000. Mm-hmm. And then all of us have what we refer to as like target salaries, which we get to depending on how the business is doing. And those are in ranges according to your title. And we top people up towards those target salaries on a quarterly basis, depending on, you know, if we feel comfortable you know, doing that and not, you know, trying to hold more money in reserve.
So what can I max out right now at Defector?
The max you could make at Defector right now is $110,000 for the year.
That is a reasonable salary in most of America.
Yeah. I mean, the salaries up and down the board are competitive market salaries. You know, nobody is getting screwed on their target salary. And so far this year, we're on track, I believe, to make have everyone make their targets.
So $3 million plus, 23 people, starting at 58 grand. Shorter version of the question, are you guys profitable and or sustainable?
Right. Well, so that's a question that we probably won't fully be able to answer until the end of next week. So what's going to happen on September 10th is a huge chunk of our annual subscribers are going to come up for renewal. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have to see, you know, how many of those people decide to stick around for year two, or how many of those people are like, oh, I subscribed and like never read it. Now I'm unsubscribing.
Do you have any sense? I assume you guys are not spending a ton of time doing audience surveys, but do you have a sense of who's going to renew? What's your gut tell you?
Yeah, we have a informed good sense. Gut? We're all fairly confident. One thing we know is that the majority of people who are unsubscribed are also reading the site very regularly, like every day. So I don't think we have a big cohort of subscribers who like tossed us $100 at the beginning of last year and then just forgot about us. So that's encouraging. Also encouraging is that a lot of the people who subscribed in the first week after we announced, they got an early bird discount. And if they come back for year two, they'll be paying the more full price. It's like, you know, 20% more. Mm-hmm. So we've sort of like, I wouldn't say we've agonized over this, but we've looked at various outcomes and models and like, you know, thresholds to keep us going. And it's a pretty, I don't think it'll be too hard to clear, you know, like barring more than half of the people who originally subscribed with us, like bailing next week. We will be in decent shape, I think.
So this is an experiment and it's 1 year in, but if the experiment is, can you guys do this? Can you have an employee owned mm-hmm. internet media company that pays everyone a living wage and treats its employees humanely? The answer seems to be yeah.
Yeah. For year one, yes. And we're definitely at the point where like, we will make it through year two, you know, yeah. No matter what happens, we'll be here, you know, again in a year and then hopefully a year after that. Like, you know, long term, who knows? We'll see. Maybe over time, people just say, like, okay, I'm actually not into this. And, you know, 5 years down the road, we run out of subscribers. But for now, year one was great. Year two will happen. And hopefully it'll be just as great as year one was.
Is there a plan B if there is real attrition and you know, a lot of people have been launching paid subscription businesses in the last year or so? A lot of Substacks went up in the last year or so. A lot of people are competing for your readers' dollars. Mm-hmm. If for some reason it doesn't work, your calculations are off, is there a backup plan?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the simplest backup plan is like, our salaries are just smaller in year two than they were in year one. You know, like we just might not get to our target salaries, which is something I think we're all comfortable with if it comes to that, because we're a bunch of people who like, not that we don't care about money, but you know, we were spent like 10 months after we left Deadspin, just sort of not doing anything and mm-hmm. not having a very good time, not making any money. So like, if you had told any of us back then, like, hey, you could have your blogging job back and you'll make $58,000 a year, we'd have been like, great, let's do that. So that's the first backup plan. It's just like, we'd be comfortable with that. Beyond that, like, we do want this to be a primarily subscription-based business. You know, we've run some very small, unobtrusive ad campaigns on the site, but those are only worth like a couple $1,000s. They're not making or breaking anybody.
Part of your pitch to the readers and I think employees was, we're not going to be an ad-based
right.
business. That's you're not like, an ad-based business. Is there a way to like add ads but still have it be a subscription-based business?
Right. So that's a line we don't really want to cross. Like the ads that we've done, they're very cheap. because they're very small and, you know, they don't, it's not pop-up ads or banner ads or anything like that. So we don't really want to go any further than we already have with that. We don't want to end up being like the 20th sports media company that's like, exciting to announce our partnership with DraftKings, and it's the DraftKings takeover of Defector.com, and like, here's my bets for this week. Like, that's a road we don't want to go down. So that is not a plan B. My hope is that like our value proposition will remain really strong. Like, I think, sure, there are a lot of Substacks out there that you can pay $5 a month for, and maybe it's, you know, an interesting person that you like reading, but there's like 20 of us and you can get it for basically the same price. And maybe you'd rather just take that deal rather than paying, you know, 10 different $5 subscriptions to 10 guys on Substack that you write.
I started this conversation out kind of diving right into numbers, which is probably not great podcasting, but I wanted to just get a sense of the mechanics and how it's working. So let's zoom out and just talk about Defector as a media property. I think of it as, you know, an extension of what Deadspin was. I was a regular Deadspin reader. This seems, it's got a lot of the same writers, obviously. Mm-hmm. It seems like you're doing what you were doing prior to getting sued out of existence by Peter Thiel, using Hulk Hogan as a front. Mm-hmm. But then again, that was an ad-based company. Are there real differences in the way you guys are approaching sports or the way you're approaching writing and running a media company between this version of Deadspin and the original?
Yeah, for sure. We're moving a lot slower than we ever did at Deadspin. And this is something we talked about pre-launch and how we wanted to handle like the editorial output. Because, you know, I think we were proud of everything we wrote at Deadspin, but a lot of it was just like news blogging, you know, because it was a traffic-based business.
Quick, so hit, like, reactive.
Right. Yeah. If we were sitting around at work and Kevin Love got traded, we would just have to get a post up that was like, oh, Kevin Love got traded. Like, look at that. You know, and it's, you know, maybe 200 words. And what we've been trying to do is like strike more of a balance at Defector where we are capable of doing that sort of fast reactive blogging, but only when we like really want to, like have a reason to, like we have a really funny headline we want to use, or, you know, a funny angle to do a quick hit blog on this. Mm-hmm. And then other than that, like just sort of taking more time with stuff because we can, and it's a different proposition where people are paying to read your website. Like, I think it's fair for them to expect like maybe a little bit more care and consideration put into even sort of the smaller 800 to 1500 word blog posts that we would do at Deadspin. So it's been an interesting balance trying to sort of balance those two things of that like fast, rambunctious blogging spirit where you're just kind of like locked in, putting stuff on the site all day, which is what Deadspin was, and something just slightly more considered, I guess.
So
I
think pace is different. Well. Yeah, pace is different. And I want to ask you about that in a second. But also, you know, I am old enough to remember when Deadspin published Brett Favre dick pics.
Right. Yeah.
And that generated a lot of traffic, and that may or may not have made money for Nick Detton. But it seems like, and you guys are certainly provocative, but I haven't seen you guys intentionally trading in that stuff. And it seems like your version of that is like we talked to a bunch of different women who sued Deshaun Watson for sexual assault. Is that an intentional shift for you?
I mean, I think that's like a natural shift that was already happening at Deadspin too before we left. You know, like reporting and breaking stories is something that we still definitely want to do. But I think that just like, you know, everyone's gotten better at handling those kinds of stories more carefully and being more considered. And so we're just one of many places that I think are trying to be a little more careful about how that stuff is done.
And on the reactive front, I'm a subscriber and I enjoy your stuff. What I've learned over the months though, that I've been a subscriber is if something interesting to me happened at sports, and I know you guys are covering it, whether it's NBA or English Premier League, I should not expect you guys to be necessarily writing about a cool game that happened or an interesting trade. And it's a little frustrating to me because that means I have to read somewhere else and, and I'm now mired in weird Google searches and who knows what I'm getting. And, you know, you go to a restaurant, you can only get what's on the menu. That it is what it is. Mm-hmm. But is there a way to satisfy that itch I have? I would like to hear someone smart at Defector talk to me about the, you know, whatever, you guys did like write a fun piece about Ben Simmons asking to get traded, right? And was smart, right. And consider that's what I want. But you do those maybe 1 out of 10 times.
I would say maybe more like 1 out of 4.
Okay.
You know, like the thing is, you know, the site for Defector and for Deadspin was always just about whatever the people on staff were interested in. So mm-hmm. like, I understand the frustration of like, sometimes there's maybe something going on in sports that you are interested in, but maybe nobody on staff is like interested in it enough to do something with it beyond what would have just been a, you know, pretty basic news aggregation. But that is something that like, I still think about constantly, because there are times when it's like, oh shit, do we miss out on that? Like, you know, is this a big enough story that we really should just get it up on the site, even though we don't have anything super substantial to say about it?
The internal thing at Vox Media, right, is put it on the screen, right? People are slacking on it. So if you're slacking about it, if you're emailing, if you're talking about it, why wouldn't you type up something?
We do have a what we call Slack law, whereas if something's being discussed in Slack for, you know, longer than 10 or 15 minutes, you know, the editors reserve the right to declare Slack law, which means that someone just needs to actually write a blog post about it.
You, last person to type about this, put that on the site.
Yeah, so it's dangerous. Like, you know, like if you're getting into a conversation in Slack, like be aware that you might get roped into this somehow.
That's very funny. We have a version of that here where it's not a law, just all the writers know that if you Slack about something in the Recode site, you may get assigned to write about it. Right, yeah. So it makes you wary to put something in Slack. We're very happy with this. It seems like it's working. What's the downside of the model that you're running? What's the thing that you could have done at old Deadspin you can't do now? Or what's the thing you wish you could do, but the structure doesn't allow for it?
Maybe this will sound like a cop-out, but I don't really feel like we've found one yet. Like this rules so far. Like I don't really know how to say, like, this has been an extremely fulfilling year for me professionally, and I think for everyone else on the staff. Yeah, I don't think we've had anything come up yet where we were like, oh, I wish we were still at Deadspin because mm-hmm. this and this would have happened instead of this. Which, you know, I don't want to like toot our own horn or brag too much about the company that we've set up, but yeah, I don't miss it. I like what we're doing now more than what we used to be doing.
We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with Tom Lay.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline, because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Wow, that guy means business.
Just an amazing player.
No, not him. The sports photographer behind him.
What?
He has a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where he earns 5% annual percentage yield. So he's scoring big on and off the field. You might even say he's the MVB.
MVB?
The most valuable business.
Making your money work harder. That's how you business differently. Intuit QuickBooks. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
And we're back. We've been talking about sort of the slow news thing you're doing, and then subscription-based. You're employee-owned. That was important when you started. Does that matter in terms of day-to-day how you're operating? Does it matter that the employees own the company instead of private equity or venture capital? I get that those things change the model of sort of where the business goes, but in terms of how you're operating day-to-day, does it feel different?
Yes, that's probably the biggest difference between what we're doing now and what we were in Deadspin. So when we first started, we spent a lot of time with various working groups setting up basically like, you know, the company constitution, the operating agreement that we all had to sign. And so the way we're set up is editorially a pretty standard hierarchy. You know, I'm the editor-in-chief. There are other senior editors that work, you know, next to me. And then there are staff writers below that. And like, so editorial decisions pretty much get made like they would at any other publication. You know, like everything sort of stops with me. It's my responsibility if we fuck something up or if something needs a final
say. The collective is not assigning stories.
Right. Yeah. We're not like, you know, deciding like pitches by vote like that. Although I will say, you know, we are a very collaborative environment editorially, just naturally. So we do spend a lot of time discussing things together and then coming up with ideas. But business-wise, you know, everybody's involved. So the, I guess I would say the main decision-making body for the company is we call it our manager board. And so that's me and Jasper Wang, who's our head of operations and
revenue. Your business guy.
He's our business guy. Yeah, our one business guy. And then there are two other seats on that board that are reserved for an editor and a staff writer. And those will get, those are voted on by the rest of the staff and they will rotate every year. So the way it's been going this year, it's like me, Jasper, Giddy Nathan, and Diana Moskowitz are the manager board. And so we're sort of the ones that make, you know, medium-sized business decisions, as in like, what should the freelance budget be? Should we open a position that we want to hire for? You know, stuff like that, that you need just sort of something smaller than, you know, 20 people all making a choice on. And then in addition to that, there are various standing committees that we have that everybody participates in. So like one of them is the growth committee, where we meet occasionally to just to talk about ideas for, you know, improving subscriptions or growing the business or whatever. And that's, you know, a group of like five people just from the staff. And you kind of choose which committee you want to be on based on what you're interested in. So there's one that's, you know, for like company culture. There's one for, we want to start doing events when that's possible. So we're, you know, talking about ideas for that. And then, you know, anything that's like a really big company decision, like should we decide to sell a chunk of it or something, or do we want to hire someone else at sort of an executive level, or do we want to get rid of me or Jasper? Those are staff-wide votes that need a two-thirds majority to happen.
Dumb question, but I'll ask it anyway. Is this structure sort of obviate any discussion of whether you guys should be unionized?
Yeah, I think so. We asked us like,
I figured that was the answer, yeah, but I thought I'd ask.
We don't need a union, right? Because we just sort of like are the union. And so far a year in, we haven't run into anything that has changed that answer.
There's no WGA or News Guild person knocking on the door saying, you should join us.
Yeah.
Okay. This is really fascinating. I am curious what you think about your pitch to readers and why people are subscribing to you versus a Substack. My sense of the Substack world is a lot of it is people paying. There's some practical sort of trade. Sometimes people want business news or crypto news or whatever it is, but a lot of it seems to be people signaling affinity with the writer and their political stance. It tends to sort of favor sort of right-wing bomb throwers, but not exclusively. I certainly assume that a lot of people who were signing up for Deadspin when you guys launched were doing some version of the same thing. Either they loved Deadspin or they hated private equity or some combination of that. How much of your appeal do you think aligns with, I'll just say it just to piss you guys off, a Glenn Greenwald or a Barry Weiss, people sort of saying, this is my flag, this is my tote bag, and I'm signaling with my dollars what I like.
No, that's not an offensive question at all. I have been thinking about that a lot as we come towards this 1-year marker. Because, you know, like I see some absurd number of people are pairing Barry Weiss now, and she's making like $800,000 a year. And I think to myself, I'm like, those people don't read her subs. Like, they don't care. Like, they just, you know, like you said, it's a affinity thing. They want to show to whoever else, you know, like who they support and what side they're on. And like, I'm sure that was true for us when we launched, you know, like, I'm sure there was a number of people who subscribed to Defector mostly, you know, just because of the circumstances of how it was created. You know, we had like a pretty good story to sell. You know, oh, all these people in an act of solidarity walked off together, and now they're starting this new thing, and like, don't you want to support that? And I'm not gonna lie and say like we didn't lean into that and you know, use that as part of our pitch. And so my hope is that like now at the end of year one, we've actually done the work necessary to convince people that like there's more to it than just that. And, you know, my hope is that if people are making that choice coming up in year two, I hope that they've seen enough on the site to be able to make a decision of like, I either like this site or I don't. And if I do like
it, it's going to stand on its own.
Right. I like it enough that I want it to continue existing. And if you want it to continue existing, you got to subscribe, because we don't have much else as a strategy for staying. And I realize that's sort of like, I don't mean that as like to be as forceful as it sounds, I guess, but like, you know, that's the model that we have.
Right. Your story, we'll talk about the story in a minute, but eventually that story just recedes into the background, right? And it's not top of mind.
It stops mattering. You know, now the site exists and it should be judged on its own merits. And if you're a person who likes it, then, you know, you have to pay for it. That's just kind of how we're set up.
So let's talk about the story for a second. So I'll do the super fast capsule version. You guys used to be part of the Gawker Media Empire, owned by Nick Denton, sued into bankruptcy by Peter Thiel. Univision buys it out of bankruptcy court. That's a mess. You guys write provocative stories about what a fucked up company Univision is. You end up now owned by something called Great Hill?
Great Hill Partners.
Great Hill Partners, run by my old boss, Jim Spanfeller. So it's a private equity company run by a guy who ran Forbes.com back in the, you know, pioneering the terrible listicle slideshow format that is still with us. What I didn't understand looking at that from afar is, do the Great Hill people know what they bought? And if so, do they intend to sort of let you guys run the way you were running, which is really counter to sort of the way Jim Spanfeller ran a company and what private equity would want? Did they not know and just totally clueless and just thought you were a random sports blog? Did they think that they would end up pushing you guys out? I mean, do you have any sense now with a couple years of hindsight to sort of understand what they were thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say anything for sure. My sense, just having experienced it and now having, you know, time to look back on it, is I don't think Great Hill cared too much one way or another. Like I think they got us for basically free, you know, and I think that the pitch was, you know, Jim Spanfeller basically told them like, look, you can have this digital media company with 8 sites for nothing, and if you put me in charge of it, I'll get you a return on investment. And they were like, fine, great, sure, we don't give a shit. Like, you know, private equity firms spend money on stuff all the time, and you know, they're just looking for like 1 out of 10 of those investments to hit. So I don't think they knew the first thing about us or really cared.
Is there any way that you guys could have succeeded or sustained yourselves in that system, or is it always going to be broken? Is there any way where you guys could have toned down your internal provocations 10% or 20% and made some sort of peace with the new structure, so you all got jobs and you all got healthcare and kept doing what you're doing, didn't have to walk off the site, or was it always doomed?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it was always pretty doomed. And I think a thing that gets lost in the sort of telling of this history is that it wasn't just us being like, oh, we don't like, you know, the vibes of these guys who are in charge and we don't fit with their vision. Like, they were like physically breaking the websites. You know, the revenue model that they wanted to chase was like the Forbes stuff. They wanted to start doing slideshows and putting as many ads as possible on the site and making them like literally unusable. So it wasn't just us being like, Jim Spanfiller's, you know, doesn't get it.
Right. I'm not suggesting you guys were coddled elitists, right? I mean, you work for Nick Denton, who is a rapacious capitalist.
Right.
Right. So you'd figured out some way to survive. But it seems like just what you guys did was not going to work.
There. Yeah. And it wasn't going to work for any version of what we were going to try to do, just because, you know, we were always going to be trending towards they wanted, you know, slideshows and, you know, easy sports news like that you would find just in some 2011 style, like ClickFarm type blog. And that just wasn't what we were going to do. And, you know, like the first big fight we had with them was about they'd put auto playing sound on video ads on the site. So it was like, it doesn't even matter what we're writing. Like if that's what's being advertised against us, like this shit's not going to work and nobody's going to read it. As long as that was their plan to make money, I don't think we were ever going to work.
Can someone else find 23 other writers and put together your business plan for a different topic? And or can you do it without having years of building an audience that knows you and likes you? I think about this like sort of like the musicians who work with major labels and then go indie, but they've had all the sort of infrastructure for years, making them, you know, national, international hits. Does this work for other people, or are you guys sort of one of a kind?
Yeah, it's tough to say. I'm very hesitant about being like, this is the model of the future. Everybody should do this. Like, it works for us. It's great. You know, everyone just go start a site. Because I think you're right that, like, you know, the decade plus that Deadspin existed was sort of creating the value that Defector eventually cashed in on. And without the very specific set of circumstances, I don't know if that would have worked. But I mean, also having said that, we just from day one, by nature of how all this came together, like set ourselves a pretty high bar to clear. It's kind of crazy to start with a staff as big as we did, you know, like there is a version of this that someone could do for something else where it's like 6 to 7 people. And, you know, you get, I don't know, up to 10, you know, X whatever writers who are popular and are sort of have a similar vibe. And I think if they started a site, that could work because the subscriber base you need to keep that going is like, it's not that much. You know, that's the big thing we've learned since doing this is 40,000 subscribers is a lot. And we feel very lucky that that many people have decided to give us their money. But once you take away all the stuff that money gets spent on at big, you know, corporate media companies, it's not that much money to run like a pretty big newsroom with a website and, you know, have everyone make very livable salaries and be able to pay their rent, because, you know, we're not paying anybody an executive salary. We're not plowing money into like developing some proprietary platform or whatever. You know, we have no like e-commerce business we have to invest in. We're not paying a sales team or anything like that. So, you know, like if you had the right group and you just were able to reverse engineer, like, okay, how much money would we need per year to keep this running? Like, I think it could work for other people.
And have you guys thought about taking this and saying, all right, let's either work with another group that wants to do a version of this, or let's expand ourselves and let's move directly into name your vertical of coverage?
Yeah, I don't know. We haven't had any discussions about that. Next week, you know, we're all getting together in New York to sort of have our like...
There's no office, right?
We do have a tiny little office share in Brooklyn that has like 10 seats. So
okay, so you're not, but you haven't sunk millions of dollars into a fancy office space in Manhattan.
We got a very good deal because of the pandemic. We haven't had any conversations like that. I mean, to some degree, there is already something like that going on. The development firm that made our website for us, Ally Interactive. What they made for us, they're calling the lead platform. And there's a sort of satellite system of sites that are on that platform. And some of them came before us. So like the Colorado Sun is a local news outlet in Denver, and they're on that. The people who used to work at the City Pages in Minneapolis just launched a local Minneapolis news site called Racket that Ally made for them and is on the lead platform. So that's that sort of community already exists a little bit. Like, we're not tied together editorially or anything like that, but there are the structures and platforms out there that other people can use if they wanted to try something like this.
I'm trying to figure out a smart way to wrap this up. Time will tell.
Time will tell.
Way. Yeah. Terrible way of ending the interview. How about this? Tom Lay from Defector. Thank you. Congrats on your first year.
Thank you.
Here's to many more. We'll be watching, reading, and I'll be subscribing. Thanks, Tom.
All right. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thanks again to Tom Lay for taking time to talk to me. Thanks again to our advertisers who allow us to bring you this show for free. I'm sure some of you might pay for this show, but you don't have to. It's for free. We are ad sponsored. We got no problem with that. Thanks to Joel and Jelani for editing and producing the show. And thanks to you guys for listening, for telling other people you listen. I always like to hear that. I like it when you guys tell me what you like. I like it when you tell me what you don't like. I like it when you tell me that there's someone I should be interviewing. I pay attention to all that stuff, even if I don't always reply to your email or tweet. But I'll try to do more of that, more of the replying, that is. Okay, this is Recode Media. I'm Peter Kafka. I will see you next week.